From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going far and wide throughout our Southwest listening area today, even across the river into Minnesota. We're talking about several arts organizations in our area and how they are reacting to COVID-19 and what we can look forward to in their various offerings as the spring artistic season gets underway. Joining us today, Adrian Sweeney from Commonweal Theater, which is in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Adrian, thank you very much for joining us today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Eva Marie Restel is also with us. She is with the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra. Eva Marie, hello to you.
Hello, Ezra. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Nicole Chamberlain Dupree is with the Minnesota Marine Art Museum, someplace I've enjoyed visiting several times in the past. Nicole, it's good to see you.
Hi, Ezra. Thank you for having me on to talk with all these wonderful people.
Absolutely. And Eileen Moeller represents two organizations today, the Frozen River Film Festival and the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Eileen, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me and for letting me play double duty for two organizations.
Absolutely. And it, you know, the more information we can offer our listeners, the better, right? So let's just get it kicked off. I know everybody has had such an interesting year, and it's hard to believe it's been almost an entire year since we started dealing with the COVID-19, various kinds of shutdowns in our multiple states and counties, and all of the different ramifications with our interactions with our audience and everything like that. So let's start in La Crosse with the Symphony Orchestra. I know that not having an audience, you know, I mean, that's kind of just completely antithetical to having a symphony orchestra. How have you adapted, Eva Marie?
Yes, it is what you look for, is the live experience. That's what people love about the symphony, is the live experience. So we did do a very quick switch around. First thing we did was we created a YouTube channel, and we moved some things and created opportunities on our YouTube channel. So Alexander Platt, our maestro, he did 30 days of symphony when we did the first shutdown. It turned into more than 30 because it was longer than 30 days of shutdown. So it was really like 43 days of symphony, but every day he shared a symphony and talked about the history of it and then shared one off of YouTube so people could listen to that every day to help us through that. So that was a really cool new offering. And off of that, we launched a bunch of YouTube offerings. But as far as the symphony was concerned, our concerts got canceled. So we moved our May one from last year, and it's in September of 2021. It's that Simply Sinatra, and it's one of our big, big concerts. So we really did not want to cancel it altogether. And people are really excited. So we are banking on the world being open in late September. So we hope to have that one. But our June concert, we had our musician, our guest musician, she did a concert in her home up in New York and did it for us, and we live streamed it. So that was what we did. But then we changed our whole season this year and moved all of our concerts to chamber size concerts. But Turbo, I've got to be honest, we're the greatest partners, allowing us to bring in 15 musicians with all the safety and all of that stuff. But we have 15 musicians. We changed our whole season, but we do chamber sized string concerts. And then sometimes we were allowed to have people, and sometimes at the last minute we had to cancel altogether, but we did live streaming. So that's new for us too. So our concerts are now all live streamed and people can get tickets for those.
That's an interesting development. You talked about creating a YouTube channel, this whole notion of live streaming when that hasn't been part of your operation before. And I know that other organizations are doing exactly the same thing. And I hope to talk to all of you about the ways that you've had to adapt. But Eva Marie, before we move on from the symphony, talk about how this has changed. The way, do you think this outreach to a more digitally oriented audience is a permanent change that you're going to be incorporating into your business model, even as you bring audiences back into the symphony?
I most definitely do. I do still think, I mean, the gem of what we offer is the live experience, and I don't think it will take the place of that. But there are instances when people are not physically able to go to the symphony. Also, younger people that may want to see it but not want to go. There's lots of different reasons. I don't expect this to be any kind of like big moneymaker bang thing, but I do think it will catch this audience of people and allow for more people to experience the symphony. So I do think we will keep it, but not as a substitute. It will be something else. And I should just say that we actually have a live stream concert coming up this Saturday. So it's free to all. We're doing our Rising Stars Concerto competition, and it's all virtual. So usually that was our March concert, but anyway, now it's its own concert. And we are live streaming that off of our YouTube channel this Saturday at 3:30. And then it will just live on our YouTube, so you can see it at any time after that. But that's a great experience for our students, because our education programs have continued. Just they've gone virtual. So that's been another whole area. We've learned lots. And I look forward to hearing how everybody else has learned lots too.
And we've got, for our listeners hearing the confusion, we've got people coming in and out of our Zoom meeting, and it's wonderful that we have this connection to be able to connect to us. That's a way that our industry has changed in radio. Normally, I would invite you all to come to our studio and visit with us, but because we're not able to do that because of COVID, we connect on Zoom, and we can still see each other and have almost an in-person experience talking about how COVID-19 is affecting our arts organizations throughout our listening area. I want to turn now to the Commonweal Theater. Adrian Sweeney, not unlike the symphony, you're used to putting butts in seats, and right now you can't. How has that adaptation gone for you, and what changes have you made at Commonweal?
Well, the whole thing was so so sudden. We as everybody did, we just had to like adapt on the fly. So we didn't really have a great plan where, I mean, we certainly could not have performed and videotaped and streamed the five original shows that we had in the lineup for the 2020 season. So what we did was, executive producer of the theater likes to joke that, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we would make a plan, and then Thursday, we would listen to the governor, and then Friday, we would rip up the plan, and on Monday, we would start a new plan. And that was pretty much how it was for months and months and months. But what we did was after we realized that this was not going to be a one-month or a two-month challenge, we started looking at scripts that we could stage specifically to stream. And we came up with a series of one person shows. We have a person in the company who has created their own vaudevillian act. That's like a homage to the great comics of the past. He adapted that show to take place virtually. So they made use of the parameters of the screen and the parameters of the video box. So we did a number of really interesting, unique shows that we sort of put together on the fly. And like everyone else, we streamed them. Some of them were donations. Some of them were ticketed. We did some radio plays. Our holiday show is actually an original radio play that the ensemble wrote. We pretty much did what every other theater in the country did. And we put stuff on camera and learned a lot every time we did it, and learned what to do the next time and the next time and the next time. And in a weird way, it was almost, it allowed us to do some things that we probably wouldn't have done normally. Fully committed is a more kind of adult show, and Headspace Theater was literally seven heads in a box. And they were monologues, and it was fascinating and super avant-garde and not normally something you'd see at the Commonweal in the summertime in Lanesboro. So we took some chances and it was fun. And now I want people back in the building.
I know everybody wants people back in the building, but having gone through this, talk about your company was writing things, a member of your company or one of your performers adapting a play that they had already been involved in to specifically take advantage, not just to work online, but to take advantage of the parameters that exist for that online audience. What has the reception from your community, from your online community been to your efforts?
Folks have been really grateful and very supportive. We have a huge base of folks. So it's been great that some folks could take advantage of being with us and still listening. At the same time, I think the shows that we could adapt to take advantage and be very intentional with the fact that we are streaming a show probably had a more successful end product than trying to modify a theatrical production for film. That, I mean, unless you are a major multi-million-dollar organization where you can have 5, 6, 7 different camera angles, it's, you know, it just isn't the same. But I think our radio shows actually were incredibly well received. The Art of the Entertainer was incredibly well received. And then there are folks who, you know, are not, that, you know, streaming is just not going to be their thing. And that's fine too.
And we've been talking about arts organizations adapting to COVID-19 here on Newsmakers Today. That was Adrian Sweeney of the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Also hearing this segment from Eva Marie Restel from the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra. Joining us today and whom we'll hear from in our next segment is Nicole Chamberlain Dupree from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum and Eileen Moeller from the Frozen River Film Festival and the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Our conversation continues just a moment. If you'd like to hear a previous episode of our show or stream part of this conversation that you might have missed, of course, you can find it on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers, and it continues in just a moment on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse, and we're joined today by Eva Marie Restel, Adrian Sweeney, Nicole Chamberlain Dupree, and Eileen Moeller. And they all represent various arts organizations throughout our listening area, including in the Winona area. Let's see, we've got the Frozen River Film Festival, the Great River Shakespeare Festival, which I know has had events kind of all over our area, but many events there in Winona. We've got the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra, also across the river in Minnesota, the Commonweal Theater represented today. And where I'd like to start in this segment is with Nicole Chamberlain Dupree from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum. I know that you have had some ability, Nicole, to have people into the museum. You have been open for a lot of the time that COVID restrictions have been in place, but under certain restrictions as to how many people you can have and all those kinds of things. Talk about how the Minnesota Marine Art Museum has adapted.
So we have adapted. We closed to the public. We had to close twice in 2020, and each time we reopened, it was under all of these parameters that we heard about from the Minnesota governor, the state of Minnesota, which we're more than happy to accommodate. So the first round of reopening, we bought so much plexiglass. It was incredible. You would think we were like building our own object cases with the amount of plexi we purchased. So we turned our front desk into a fishbowl of sorts, which is only appropriate because we're a marine art museum, right? So we like to crack jokes about who gets to work in the fishbowl. We put up plexi, and then we turned the museum into a kind of touch-free space. So we removed our family reading area, which was a bit sad for us because it's a place that we encourage families to just kind of sit, rest, take a break, play with some fun toys, read some books, sit on the couch. And of course, all of those were now inciting fears of, you know, COVID transmission. So everything was, you know, stored We put decals on the floor for social distancing. We made signs. We spaced out the store a little bit more. And then we looked at those parameters of the 25% occupancy. And we got out our blueprints, and we know how big each of our galleries and our atrium and our education room are. And as a team, we broke out how many people are permitted in each space. So we started doing gallery capacities. They're on the doors of all of the rooms, all of the galleries. We put signs everywhere, but we made them really attractive, so hopefully people see them. And we also had the added benefit of when you first come into the museum and you're greeted by this big open atrium, and we have these mastheads in the atrium there, and we put masks on the mastheads. So we figured if the masts are masked, so are you. Because we had to get up there with a cherry picker to put those suckers on. So it's a lot easier for you as a person. So we installed foot poles. We did everything. We even moved some of our staff desks because they were within 6 feet of one another. And I have two colleagues with me, my marketing communications team, Dave Casey and Caitlin Cruchet. And of course, everybody has all these other roles. But those two and myself, we formed what we call Team Corona, and we put together a big preparedness plan that was sent to all of the staff with what we're doing, who we're working with for a cleaning team, what people are responsible for, phase one, phase two, three, phase three, phase four. We send it out regularly. We get feedback. I mean, what you see in the front of house when you come in as a visitor, again, nautical pun, is only the tip of the iceberg. So we did a lot back of house that is still going on that we, when we closed down for round two, reopening was like, we've done this, right? This is our second rodeo. I don't know a nautical pun, so I'm going to go with rodeo. But we put a lot of things in place physically, but then we also moved a lot of stuff online as well, just because we're open doesn't mean you're comfortable coming. So we wanted to make sure, much like the rest of my colleagues on this amazing call, that you can still participate in what we offer from the comfort and safety of wherever you may be.
So we've heard a lot about what the symphony and what the Commonweal did to provide online resources. What about an art museum is a different thing. I mean, usually the exhibits are very static and kind of with some educational information there to absorb, but otherwise it is just kind of reflecting on the art that is in front of you. How do you move that online?
Yeah, it was a lot of conversations that we are still having to this day. So we worked with our artists for whom we have exhibitions on the walls right now, and we asked if we could have their permission to put their shows online. So we've got all of their images up on our website with didactic panels. We moved a lot of our audio tours. We put them on our website as well. We also started doing Toddler Tuesdays by email, fun videos in the galleries with questions that our educator Heather poses questions to parents for a little more guidance if folks are just a tiny bit burnt out on home distance learning, whatever you might want to call it. I've heard clever names for what parents are going through right now. And
parents are clever people.
They are the most resourceful individuals right now, and I bow down to them as far as I can go. We've just, you know, the word of 2020, if it wasn't COVID, was pivot, right? So we really pivoted in a lot of ways. And I think one of the most fun things we did at the very beginning was when March Madness was canceled, we did an art March Madness on our social media, and we pit two works of art against each other and had people vote. And like, it was amazing. And the work that the audience picked is a stunning work. It's a rainbow at Watkins Glen. I always intermix the name, and it won, and it's a heavy favorite. But what's funny is it's not the most, like, it's not Monet, it's not the Washington Cross and the Delaware, it's not like those big names. It's just this one that captivates people, and it won the whole thing. It was just like March Madness. I think it kind of showed how much we as art people and then our incredibly wonderful community, we're really still wanting to engage in the arts that we actually like voted hot or not with a work of art. So it's we had a really good time of trying, and we still do. We're still having fun with what sticks, what falls.
As our program goes on, I'm going to circle back and give each of our guests an opportunity to talk about what current opportunities there are for people to participate and what's coming up later in the season as well. Turning now to Eileen Muller. Eileen, you're involved with the Frozen River Film Festival and the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Starting with the Frozen River Film Festival, I know you guys have some things coming up soon. I know that the film festival is moving into the digital space this year instead of being in person. Talk about that adjustment.
Yeah, so I just joined Frozen River Film Festival in November. This is my first year planning the festival for Frozen River. And I'm coming from Great River, where I'm still helping out part-time because, like everything else right now, there's a lot up in the air. And since people are working from home, it's, you're just trying to do everything you can to keep things going. But with Frozen River Film Festival, I'm really excited to be joining them. And film actually, even though we in a perfect world would want to have an in-person festival, it is, it makes sense for that as an event to move online because people are really comfortable right now with streaming services and with getting films in their home. So we are using a streaming service called Eventive. All of our films are uploaded to Eventive. There is a schedule just like there is with a normal festival. You buy a pass, you get access to all of the films. And the kind of cool thing is normally for our in-person festival, there may be sets playing in different locations at the same time. So folks kind of have to choose where they're going to go and they might miss a film. But because of the streaming, they are actually able for the first time to watch every single film in the festival. So films will premiere at the same time, just like they would if we had multiple venues, but you have a week to watch each film. So you could watch them as they come out in the schedule over the weekend of the festival. But then if you miss any, you have a few more days after the festival to watch the ones that you missed. We are also still doing workshops like we normally do. We have three workshops that will, one is happening on Saturday, February 13th, and then there are two on Sunday, February 14th. And all of those are free and open to the public. So anyone can sign up for those, even if they don't have a pass to the festival. And then we do have some Q&As. And we are still doing our awards. So we have judges who jury the films and decide the best ones. And so we will still be doing an award ceremony that will be live streamed. And so we're keeping a lot of the same elements. It of course won't feel quite the same, but this will be the first year that everyone can bring their pet to the festival, which personally I am very excited about.
Me too.
They can, you know, watch in their sweatpants. They can, you know, have the whole family together. So there are some benefits. And I do think that going forward, even though as soon as we're able to do it safely, we will have an in-person event again. But like Eva Marie and Adrian have mentioned, accessibility is one of the unforeseen benefits of having to move things online, especially in the winter in a rural area. You may have planned an in-person event, but people might not be able to make it because of the weather. And people may have other restrictions, mobility issues that would bar them from coming into a physical space. So I do think going forward, what we will do is we will still have all of the films available online so that after the physical festival is over, those who have passes can go back and watch things that they may have missed, or those who could not physically make it to the festival could still purchase a pass and get some of those experiences. So there are going to be some things that we are learning from this time that we may not have learned otherwise. And I personally, in my work with the Shakespeare Festival and working with a lot of front of house things and patron audience service things, I'm always looking for greater accessibility. So anything that that meets people where they are, whether it's physically or mentally, I'm always super excited about. So this will be a good test run for seeing how that works for people. And, you know, we have a really supportive audience base. And so I'm still looking forward to it, even though we'll be, won't be physically together. It'll still feel warm and cozy.
I don't know how far out you choose the pieces that are featured in a film festival. Has any of that been affected by COVID-19? Have you had to make any changes because of COVID-19, or is any of the content reflective of what's been going on in the last year or so?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So we do actually have a set. So we get a lot of shorter films. And so we put them together in sets by different topics. And so this year we actually have a coronavirus set, which will include films that have been inspired by this. So there's actually going to be a set as well that was put together by an international group of people who have been coordinating across continents to tell stories of how people are coping with COVID in, I think one person is in Greece and one person is somewhere else in Europe and someone's in Brazil, someone's in the United States. And all of those people have been coordinating on different film projects for the past few months. And so we're going to be including that, which I'm really excited about. Definitely, I think all of us in the arts know that artists tend to respond to what's going on, and some of them are really quick about it. So it will be interesting to see what pieces of art come out of this, and I'm glad that we're going to be able to include some of those. And we did have, normally we have 70 to 80 films in the festival. This year we have over 50, which is still quite a few films. But I do think that films that had planned to be released this year, some of them may have been slowed down in the post-production process. So I am curious to see if for the 2022 festival, if there will be an uptick in films that are submitted. But we still have a really great selection. I'm really excited about it.
Well, that'll be interesting to see what happens in years going forward, how future years cause artists to reflect on what we've been going through will be interesting to see with the passing of time as well. Now, that's the Frozen River Film Festival. Turning to the Great River Shakespeare Festival, how has that organization had to adapt in recent times? I'm assuming those in-person performances also not an option.
Yeah, Double Duty. Great River Shakespeare Festival is... you know, it's a 6-week in-person summer festival. And so really we have a narrow window of time when we perform. And we also are in residence at Winona State University. We have a really great relationship with Winona State, but it is a state school. So they were subject to a lot more restrictions than perhaps another entity would have been. We could have made whatever plans we wanted, but if the university wasn't able to have us in the space. The other piece of it is that Great River brings in artists from all over the country to comprise our company. Every year we have over 100 people coming from across the country to live in Winona. And we rent residence space again from Winona State University. So there were just so many elements to this, people traveling, people housing together, using someone else's property, all of those things really complicated matters. So like Nicole said, it was all about pivoting. We really wanted to keep as many artists employed as possible, because especially with actors, I'm sure Adrian notes so many, the actors were one of the first people that lost their jobs, and they're probably going to be the last to get their regular jobs back. And we employ actors who are part of Actors Equity. So there were also restrictions on what the union would allow actors to do. And they were trying, Actors Equity was trying to figure out how to manage actors who wanted to do Zoom performances. So there were all sorts of rules with that, in addition to getting the rights to plays. So there were a lot of things to figure out very quickly. And fortunately, we have a very scrappy and resourceful group of people who really care about the art they're producing, and they really care about our community. So we were able to do some really creative things. We did some original works, like Adrian mentioned, and we also did some things that we normally want to do, but don't have time for because the season gets so busy. So for example, we did some staged readings of new works. New plays are something that as artists, we get really excited about, but oftentimes since we're a Shakespeare festival, we're focusing on those bigger scripts. So we were able to showcase those company members who had original work. Another thing we were able to do was continue our education classes. We have a really strong program of educational materials and classes for grade school, middle school, and high schoolers. And those instructors were able to find a way to still offer those classes. And the work that the kids produced remotely was absolutely phenomenal. So we're really fortunate to have a really dedicated group of artists and educators, and the community was still really excited about engaging with us. So that was really wonderful.
That's Eileen Moeller talking about the Great River Shakespeare Festival, which she is still involved with. Primarily, Eileen is involved with the Frozen River Film Festival, which we've also heard about. And hilariously, her cat has no idea that she's in the middle of a radio interview. We've also been hearing from Nicole Chamberlain Dupree from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum. Earlier in the show, we heard from Eva Marie Restel from the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra and Adrian Sweeney from the Commonweal Theater. And we'll hear from them again coming up later in our program. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to check out this episode or any other episode on our website, just go to WPR.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from WPR. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thanks for joining us. We are joined by four guests today representing arts organizations from across our listening area. Eileen Moeller is with the Frozen River Film Festival and the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Eva Marie Restel is with the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra. Nicole Chamberlain Dupree is with the Minnesota Marine Art Museum. Adrian Sweeney is with Commonweal Theater. And I thank all of them for joining me today. Let's talk about current offerings, or at least upcoming offerings. Let's see. Eva Marie, let's start with you. The La Crosse Symphony Orchestra has some performances scheduled. I know you're super excited about September. Let's not talk about September yet. But what do you have coming up soon at LSO?
Well, I had mentioned earlier that just this Saturday, we have our Rising Stars Concerto competition, which will be live streamed on YouTube. And everything that we have, you can reach from our website, which is lacrossesymphony.org. But we have two really cool things. One, our March concert's coming up. And I had mentioned earlier, we switched everything around. It's a chamber concert. And we have it's two violins that kind of duel in this piece. So that's going to be really a fun, different kind of concert. So we're excited about the March 6th concert. But we have our Symphony for Youth. Now, we typically have over 2,000 students that are like third, fourth, fifth grade that come and enjoy this every year. And it's a highlight. The kids get excited. They learn so much. It's so much fun. It's designed for them. It's 45 minutes long. And as you might guess, we can't have 2,000 students come into my kids aren't in school. So we're going to do it virtually, but we added another element. And we created these new educational videos, got a grant from the county, La Crosse County, to create these educational videos. And I was thinking about what Adrian was saying and Nicole was saying about parents and how they're so resourceful. And Nicole was saying she liked to make things to help these parents and teachers with extra really great content that they don't have to, because it's so hard. Well, we did that for the symphony. So we've created these six videos that teach you all about the symphony for elementary students, and they're fun and they meet musicians and they learn about it. And there's all these things about the symphony that people don't know. They also, it has this, you know, a bad rap, I call it, but, you know, saying that it's not fun or interesting and it's for old people and all of these things that are not true. And so we unveil that in these six videos. And so now we have the Symphony for Youth is a live stream option, and you can purchase it and you get the live stream concert as well as these six videos.
Where can people find information on where to get those? Is that all on your website?
You know, this is the funniest thing. It is. But we're getting a brand new ticketing system tomorrow. So our whole system was taken down today, but it's supposed to be, I know. Thank you, Nicole, for that. If you can't see her, but she's putting her hands on her head for me. And I really appreciate the compassion. But it is a great new system we're getting tomorrow, and we will be up and running. So come Monday, everything will be up and running and all the links will be live and you will be able to purchase it at that time.
Come Monday, it'll be all right, as the song says, right?
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
But as of Monday, yes, you can go to our website and all the links are there for everything that we offer.
And as far as the concert this weekend, the performances this weekend, those are on your YouTube channel, and tickets are not necessary for that, right?
They aren't. It's free. Yep.
Very good.
You can
good.
Get the link off of our website, but you can also just go straight to YouTube, La Crosse Symphony.
Adrian Sweeney of the Commonweal Theater, what's coming up with your organization and how can people take part?
Well, normally at this time of year, we would be in what we call our pre-production season, where we're January, February, we're really laying the groundwork for the coming season, which typically starts in April. However, this year, we are doing a virtual cabaret. It is called Stella's Clear Blue Morning, and it was, again, created here at the Commonweal, featuring one of our long-time ensemble members, Stella Burt. Her husband, Scott Dixon, passed away very early at the age of 48 a couple of years ago. And so we have a fund, the Scott Dixon Memorial Fund, and they have been working on this cabaret since, I think, October, putting together and 45 to 50 minutes of beautiful, uplifting, fun, and funny songs that have been videoed independently and then spliced together with Zoom. And so, you know, we're all getting so good at Zoom and editing that way. So Stella's Clear Blue Morning, it turns out when it was all done and put together, we realized it is exactly the message we all need to hear right now, which is basically the sun will come out tomorrow, and that we will all be together again. So that is running. It is a virtual production. It is a fundraiser. So there is a ticket, a donation request that is available on our website right now through February 14th. And then we are going to cross our fingers and go all poly positive and assume that we're just going to be able to get right back on the horse. So we have rehearsals starting in March, and we have a show set to go up in the middle of April. And we have planned that if all of these shows will be available digitally, or virtually, I should say. So all of our season pass holders and all of our patrons, if they're not comfortable, even if we can open our doors to 25 or 50% capacity, if folks aren't comfortable, they can still access the work from the comfort of their home. But we are hoping against hope that we'll be able to start in April with 25 or 50% capacity. Like everyone else, we've got, you know, circles on the floor where you can step, and we've got our mask policy and everybody gets hand sanitizer. And again, we're just all trying to be, for us here, it's been flexible and nimble. You know, we're just trying, you know, trying to be flexible and nimble and whatever happens, preparing for the best. But we have a season of 5 shows starting in April.
So tell me how people can find information on your upcoming future performances and offerings and other information about Commonweal.
Well, everything is available on our website, which is commonwealtheater.org. And Eva Marie, I so empathize with your plight about the website. My website was down for like 10 minutes last week and I was almost moved out of the country. but everything can be found on our website, commonwealtheater.org. And then all of our social media, Facebook for sure. Folks can check us out there. One of the other things that we've been doing, which was kind of fun, we've been hosting virtual opening night parties on Zoom, of course, and then they are shown live on Facebook. So those things are out there as well, and we'll continue to do that.
That sounds wonderful. Nicole Chamberlain Dupree, Minnesota Marine Art Museum. I know you've been open a lot of this time, and exhibits are available for people to see. What are some of the featured exhibits that you have coming up that you'd like to specifically highlight for people?
Much like you all, I'm so glad I'm with folks who are in the performance space, because the show must go on, right? And it's true for the museum. We rotated exhibitions while we were closed each time, much to the pain of everyone. So right now we have three great shows, the two that just reopened. One is Tony Duran, California. He is a very well-known photographer. This show does contain nudity. I'm going to say that right now. There's my disclaimer. But he's done a lot of fashion photography for all of the fashion houses. And the lead image is actually a photo of J-Lo that inspired her most recent In the Morning video that is like taking the world by storm. It's a fantastic, beautiful, stunning show with beautiful people, and they're all by the pools and the beaches of California, which I'm like, man, January in Minnesota, and you, my curatorial team, installs photos of celebrities right in next to pools, and part of you is like, this, it's a great idea, and it's January, so it like reinforces all your resolutions. Anyway, it's a stunning show, beautiful photography. And then the other show we have up right now is very peaceful and inspiring and meditate. I mean, in another way, and absolutely in another way. It's by Frederick Summers. It's called The Miracle of Waters. He's an oil and pastel artist who's just over in Northfield, and just captivating, calming, peaceful images in that work. No nudity in that one. And then we've got a Memories of the Titanic as well, which is more educational and historical works from our collection, whereas Tony Duran and Fred Summers, those works are on loan. And those artists, have permitted us to put their exhibitions up online. So you can see those on our website if you're not yet ready to come in. We are open. I'm really the lucky one on this call, because we have been able to be open and welcome folks in and allow our space to be a place of respite and comfort and relief and inspiration and meditation and sometimes just pure escape from your house, which we are truly fortunate for. And we still have hand sanitizer everywhere as well. And what's funny is I have a 1-year-old, and she does this. She knows how to wash her hands and do sanitizer. So she does this to Itsy Bitsy Spider, and we haven't yet corrected her of the hand washing motion. But we've got sanitizer everywhere as well. So if you are ready to come in and see these works in person, you can. If you're not, they're online. Our website, mmam.org, Google Minnesota Marine Art Museum as well. So you can see them then if you're not yet ready to come in. But much like orchestras and performances, it's different on a screen, but the beauty and the intention and the impact is hopefully still coming across for our folks who need it.
Turning back to Eileen Moeller before we take our last time out, Eileen, what opportunities are people? I know the Frozen River Film Festival is going to be online this year. Where can people find information on how to get tickets to that?
Yes, they can find information, the schedule, and purchase passes for the virtual festival on our website, which is frff.org. frozenriverfilmfestival.org, or you can just Google Frozen River Film Festival or Film Festival Winona. Any of those you will be likely to find our website. And that is our big event. We have two sets that normally come to us from our festival we have a really great relationship with, which is Mountain Film in Telluride, Colorado. Normally, Mountain Film brings two sets to our festival. This year, we are putting that off until April. So folks who purchase their pass for the virtual festival will also get admission to those two sets when we screen them in April. And we are planning that those will be outdoor socially distanced screenings. So we're really looking forward to gathering together at a respectful distance to screen those two sets come spring.
And information about that is on your website, which is?
FRFF.org.
And what about the Great River Shakespeare Festival?
Yes. So we have continued to do programming online since this past summer. So when our season was postponed in the summer, we did weekly online events, whether those were staged readings or panel discussions. And then every month since then, we have done either a staged reading or some sort of performance and had really great discussions with folks afterwards. We will be doing another one of those this Sunday evening. We're going to be doing a reading of Human Error, which is a play by Eric Pfeffinger. And it is about two couples who are trying to have a child through IVF, and they are at opposite ends of the political spectrum, and their embryos get switched. And so these families who are very different politically have to figure out what to do throughout their pregnancy. So we thought that considering a lot of political differences that are apparent everywhere right now, that this would be a great play to do. And we're doing this in the style of what we've been calling our casual reads, not to the public, but just as a company every Monday night. For the past few months, we've been doing casual reads of plays that we're interested in. And this has been a really great opportunity to spotlight Black, Indigenous, and people of color playwrights who don't normally get shown during quote unquote classics. So we've been reading all these great new plays. And in that spirit, we're going to be doing this one in the style of our casual read. So the actors will, the script will be up on the screen, the actors will read it, and then afterwards, viewers will be invited to have a discussion about the play. So we're really looking forward to that one. We will be doing another one in February. And we also have found some funds to fund some of our, a young woman who was one of our interns a few years ago. Her name is Norma Ruiz Cruz, and she is developing a play that we're going to do a reading for later this spring. And so we'll be continuing to do those. We will have a festival this summer. It will likely be outdoors. We haven't solidified that yet. We're still looking at contingency plans, but come what may, we are going to be doing theater in Winona. We're going to be doing The Taming of the Shrew, The Tempest, and likely we will also be doing Every Brilliant Thing. And those were all part of our season 17, which we postponed. So season 17 will be happening this summer in 2021. And we're really looking forward to it. And all that information is on our website, grsf.org. And just Google Shakespeare Winona, it'll pop up.
That's Eileen Moeller from the Great River Shakespeare Festival and the Frozen River Film Festival. Eileen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Also joining us, Eva Marie Restel from the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra. Eva Marie, thanks a lot.
It was great to be here with everyone.
Nicole Chamberlain Dupree is with the Minnesota Marine Art Museum. Nicole, thanks for joining us on Newsmakers.
Hey, anytime. You got my number. Just call me.
Absolutely. And Adrian Sweeney is with the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Adrian, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it was really my pleasure. Thank you.
There are several opportunities to hear Newsmakers each week. Our show originates Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We repeat at 6 p.m. on Fridays on WLSU 88.9 in La Crosse. And for you early risers, 5 a.m. Saturday, You can find us on WLSU 88.9 in La Crosse as well. Dawn Jewell produces the show along with John Davis, and I thank both of them along with the rest of our La Crosse staff. I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.